As part of SOGI's UBC Research Initiative, scholars from across campus, as well as community experts, have generously contributed their ideas and impressions regarding the implementation of SOGI curriculum in their own teaching practices. From the Department of Curriculum and Pedagogy, we learn from Dr. Lisa Lautzenheiser, Dr. Carrie Renwick, and Dr. Sandra Scott. We sat down with Dr. Sean Faber from Educational and Counseling Psychology and Special Education, and Dr. Mona Gleason, Dr. Amy Scott Metcalf, and Dr. Leslie Roman from Educational Studies. For perspectives from the Language and Literacy Education Department, we spend time with Dr. Derek Gladwin, Dr. Annette Henry, Dr. Kedrick James, and Dr. Marianne McTavish. Moving outside the education departments, we turn to the expertise of Dr. Lori McIntosh, who teaches at the Masters of Educational Technology program. From the Teacher Education Office, we hear perspectives from Rod Brown, Steve Mulligan, and John Yamamoto. And finally, the Associate Dean of Teacher Education, Dr. Wendy Carr, shares her thoughts on this project. In these interviews, members of the Faculty of Education and the Teacher Education Office dive into how they enhance their pedagogies by integrating SOGI-related topics, readings, and so forth into their teaching and instruction. Collectively, they illuminate the possibilities as well as points of tension in this important work by mining their teaching experiences for promising and precarious moments that can arise in teaching SOGI-focused learning. They address themes including instructor attitudes, bringing SOGI into the classroom every day, the ever-changing landscape of SOGI language, and our responsibilities as inclusive educators. Please enjoy this preview of their insights for the TIFA Curriculum Mapping Project. On Teacher Attitudes, Kedrick James.
I think you have to teach through a sense of love and through a sense of loving and loyalty to your students. That is a kind of love in which you want to understand and identify with what they're going through so that you can help them the best. If you treat them all as just cardboard cutouts, you can't actually assist a student very well. You have to be willing to commit something of yourself. If in finding something that is not quite the same as you, if that makes you shut down how you approach a student, then you're not really being a very good teacher. I like to think that we all strive to be the best teachers we can be.
Annette Henry.
So I work hard at creating a climate where people can feel comfortable and also feel empowered to say, you know, this is one of the most important jobs ever. You know, you're going to be basically empowering kids or destroying them.
John Yamamoto.
I think what we've told our students is simply be cognizant of the environment you're in, and not to be afraid of bringing anything up, but you know, you're always, as part of your role as a teacher, you've got that, one of the greatest things about being a teacher is you have that autonomy to kind of push the envelope in whichever way you want to go, which is great.
Leslie Roman.
In the end, it comes down to teachers educating themselves and allowing youth with their different differences to help teachers become educated. And so sometimes the best education a teacher gets is a student walking up to them and saying, I don't identify as a boy or girl. And they're expressing, for example, being taunted or teased for expressing a non-conforming gender identity, then it is at that point the school's job and the teacher's job to figure out how to support that student.
On making SOGI an everyday endeavor, Lori McIntosh.
If you do something enough, it becomes part of the way you think. So if you start from the very beginning to include it in your pedagogy, it becomes your pedagogical style. It becomes part of who you are as a teacher, and it is your curriculum. So you're not having to think about, oh, okay, did I put that in there?
Derek Gladwin.
If I'm teaching a course on, let's say, teaching literature, for example, reading novels or short stories dealing with sexual orientation and gender identity, you know, that's certainly a place where we can jump in and start to discuss about how narratives are gendered in stories and short stories, how we, you know, gender authors, how we look at literature in terms in terms of gender identity and how we can pull out SOGI issues.
Marianne McTavish.
teachers typically, when they address their children, call them boys and girls. So it will, to get their attention, boys and girls, or boys can line up, or girls can line up, or pattern, boy, girl, boy, girl. And we don't really even realize we're doing that. So it's an awareness of maybe there are children in there who are exploring gender and identity, and there's no place for them there, so they have to choose between one or the other.
Lori McIntosh.
It's good for everyone, not just for trans students, mm-hmm. and not for, just for LGB students and Two-Spirit students. It's good for everyone when yes. there's that kind of diversity and that kind of space available to be who it is you want to be.
On the Soji language landscape, Sandra Scott.
Yeah, I have to work on my language because, you know, brought up in this very Western British system, as we call it, and there's always a male and female, he, she. And trying to remove that from my vocabulary and focus on non-gendered words is really difficult.
Wendy Carr.
You're going to make mistakes. You just are. And telling people, well, it's okay, at least you're trying, is fine, except people are used to operating at a high level of competence. It's literacy, and developing competence in that literacy takes time, and it takes effort.
Mona Gleason.
I try to not make individual identity sort of categories, particularly ones that are marginalized, but to instead let's look at this as a set of processes and relationships that shift and change over time, but that we all have a part in.
Amy Scott Metcalf.
What I would probably do differently, and drawing from all the different instructors that are teaching the course, but I think what I would do differently is be more explicit about pronouns, mm-hmm. you know, how we identify ourselves in our everyday interactions with each other, have that be part of the introduction of the class, you know, just kind of infuse it through mm-hmm. all the layers of the class, right? It's not a unit you add on. It's not a make sure to put this before or after the practicum kind of question, right? It's like, it just is,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
we just do it through it.
Wendy Carr.
TIFA has been a wonderful, I think, wake-up call for the faculty. Even the acronym SOGI, some people are afraid to say, well, I actually don't know what that means. Or even if they know what the words mean, I really don't know for sure how that impacts my teaching or why this matters to me. So the fact that when someone starts to ask those questions, I think that's fantastic.
Carrie Renwick.
It's a matter of trying to appreciate and learn from students what their preferences are for how they might want to identify. Probably with older elementary, younger secondary, it's a matter of actually not necessarily saying, what do you want, what do you prefer, but to be able to open up in a way to say, it is possible to use alternatives between he and she. Mm-hmm. So that use of language in that sense would be one of the sorts of things that would be of concern.
On educator responsibilities. Rod Brown.
We're not telling you this is how you have to do it. We're having the conversation.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that perspective and that kind of strategy.
Shauna Faber.
To take a step back and look at what are the things that are happening that are that we just think are normal and why. And what is to just take that step back. And so that can raise all kinds of issues. And so that sometimes leads to discussions about gendered washrooms mm-hmm. or asking boys in the class to say, you know, I need three strong boys to carry this table when it's elementary. Everybody is the same. You know, those kinds of things. So hoping that students will bring all kinds of issues that they wouldn't have noticed before. And so I think that's part of the practice for sure.
Lisa Lautzenheiser.
From my point of view, critical to actually start talking to the students, whether they're 6 or they're 16,
yeah.
So that they're the ones that can help guide us in relationship to how it happens, alongside teachers and parents and administrators, that the students are already the ones who are, they're the ones that have had GSAs. Mm-hmm. For most of us, we didn't get raised up with GSAs. Mm-hmm. They already are in those situations. They already have knowledge. How do we also present that to teachers?
Steve Mulligan.
We definitely had an increase this year in the number of
trans-identified teacher candidates who've come into the program, and some of them have specifically said that they felt that their gender identity prevented them from becoming a teacher, but when they heard about the TIFA project, they felt more comfortable, and they felt that maybe they could actually pursue a,
that's really nice
a career in teaching, and that there was a place for them to do that.
Annette Henry.
If we believe in equity, and if we really believe in justice, at some point we have to say, this is what I believe, and this is what I'm going to teach, because at some level, teaching is very political.
Leslie Roman.
There's a side we don't talk about much, and it's called the politics of social justice as love. If you can create Soji as the possibility of pride and living without fear, you have created an artistic masterpiece in your class.